What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funny's The Conjuring Universe, Cinematic Universe in Review. That's right. We are ranking and reviewing every movie in the cuckoo. Very exciting stuff. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by big old Bathsheba himself, Greg Miller.
Hello.
It doesn't get old to me, guys. The nun, Elise Willems.
They referenced me in this one, I think. Did they? I can't remember.
I don't think so.
I sat this one out, rebuilding the hype.
Terrible.
The crooked man, James Willems.
Someone get me a bacchiotomy.
Half-baked reference. I see. Okay.
And the old man from Conjuring 2, Nick Scarpino.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show.
Mm-hmm. Very, very, very exciting stuff. Yeah, very low energy Nick today.
Come on, Nick.
I apologize.
Okay, actually, hold on.
You know what? Nick isn't some kind of giraffe at the zoo that just performs on command, Tim. All right? Let him warm up to it.
I haven't seen a giraffe do anything but eat.
When's the last time you went to the zoo and you looked at that giraffe and you said, he hasn't extended his neck yet?
I was at the zoo this morning.
That giraffe is performing.
Whoa.
I was at the zoo this morning.
Oh, man. Today we are talking about The Curse.
Here it is.
Lost my place in the dock. I got sidetracked here.
It's hard to believe you forgot the title of this amazing movie, Tim.
Oh, my God.
Before we get into it, just enjoy something.
There's a role that I need to rigma here. Okay, here's the deal. You can watch this show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, or you can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also get the show as a podcast. Search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Reviews. We'll be right there for you. If you want to get the show ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, James Davis, @JamesDavisMakes.
James Davis.
Let's go. Andrew Feisner and the new Jeremy Zuccarello, aka Zuko Delight.
We missed it on Internet Explorers yesterday, but we were calling Andrew Feisner the Fast Feisner, and then we were going to try to call Zuckner the Furious Zook or Furious Zuckner. Okay. I don't know. We're workshopping it still, guys.
Okay.
Okay. What about
I'm
going to
drink my Coke
hazard
and stay silent for the next
15 minutes. Why do you have to be so negative?
Come on, can't you enjoy something for once in your life? Don't sip that Coke.
Look how coy he looks.
You're in trouble.
I don't know if you noticed this. Tim and I have tried to talk him out of it, but Nick's got this new thing. He turned over a new leaf with The Dark Knight, and that's just that he hates movies and he hates everything about them. So he's just going to be a big old well of black hate over there, just spewing out like the Amityville Horror.
I don't want to derail this.
Elise, derail all you want. What's up?
I saw some controversy happening. I see Nick's apologizing in videos, and I say, what is going on?
The drama.
Yeah.
That's the thing about you, funhouse people. You wouldn't understand drama, and we are in the middle of it right now. The fallout of Nick Scarpino.
And I would actually like Nick to retract the apology. I think I'm in a new camp of fans where I say I want to take that apology back.
Crystal,
you know what, Tim?
Oh, no. That's where we're at.
You know what, Tim? This video is going to be called "Nick Doesn't Apologize for 2 days ago."
No, well, let's save that for the KF podcast next week. Because, I love that we just keep doing the same thing, which is just titling our videos "We're Sorry About the Last Video," and it keeps
these
working.
These rubes, on the internet keep working. Like, what are they sorry for? Spoiler: we're not sorry for anything. Fuck you.
It's
took us so long to figure out this naming convention.
People think I did something bad. They click on our videos.
I love it. And also, Elise, I don't believe you that you want him to retract the statement. You need to watch the Dark Knight review to understand.
Fiery, opinionated Nick. It's my favorite thing, the sass.
What if it's just whiny crybaby Nick?
I just want to remind everyone, Elise only needs to stop in for maybe 45 to 60 minutes every single week. I feel like 7 days worth of firebrand Nick is probably going to burn out.
Okay.
Shut your mouth.
Okay. Here's the deal. If I can defend myself for a second with James.
Absolutely not.
Because James, I look up to you. I respect
Absolutely
you.
Absolutely not.
I started the whole review by saying I love The Dark Knight. It is one of the all-time greatest movies ever made.
And that was your whole review? Oh, okay. There's more.
But
I'm like
she's Kermit.
The tea lizard.
I have some small criticisms of it that show how great the movie is.
What's up, everybody? Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Discord kicks me out again. Like Discord always likes to do.
Discord knew that Nick was on another one.
Yeah.
It's almost as though Discord didn't want to hear this trash.
The Dark Knight's garbage.
Oh my God.
See, this is what we deal with, guys. But imagine he says that and then we all go like, what? No. And then he doubles down and it's 2 hours of
It's a gateway.
It was
criticism.
Not that bad. It's a gateway. I had minor criticisms.
Minor criticisms
of some of the choreography and how some of the scenes were cut. I think the editing in that movie is not great, but the movie itself is great.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we're here to talk about.
Well, if I might say, one of my favorite things is that Nick takes something that's objectively good and then he picks it apart. So I don't mind as much because. We decided the Dark Knight is one of the greatest cinematic achievements ever made.
Agreed.
So I'm totally fine, and I enjoy Nick, his diatribes and doing it.
I appreciate it. That, Elise, because you are the most, I always say, the most well-rounded and smartest out of anyone I've ever met.
Yeah. Well, let's see if
he'll
can
still
apply
find things to criticize
to another one of the greatest.
You did Mary James. Clearly, your opinion went south somewhere around there.
Today, we are talking about The Curse of La Llorona. The title of the film roughly translates to The Curse of the Weeping Woman.
Damn.
Wow. Learning some shit.
I'm going to tell you what. This movie's worth it for one reason only. Linda Cardellini's guttural scream.
Every
time she screams, it sounds like she took a football from Tom Brady right to the gut.
We have literally had meetings, Nick, and Tim starts them and says, please, just let me get through the opening facts before you give opinions.
We have talked for 20 minutes on my opinion on a different movie. It's not even
it was 6 minutes. Nick, just
they don't know that. Barrett, thanks for ruining the joke. That thing cut out.
They don't know that.
They cut out 20 minutes of it.
Oh, God. The Curse of La Llorona, released on April 19th, 2019. Now, here is my favorite thing about this entire movie. I don't know if you guys remember this, but this was about a week after another movie came out, Detective Pikachu. And there was a little mix-up that happened. A theater in Montreal, Quebec, was supposed to play Pokemon Detective Pikachu, but after the trailers for Annabelle Comes Home, Joker, and Child's Play were featured, this film played instead, causing the children in the audience to run out crying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Get them.
Get them.
That is a good opening scene to show to a room full of children, too.
Insane. Because those kids get murked right off the get. directed by Michael Chaves. Chaves began directing several short films, including The Maiden, which won the Best Super Short Horror Film Award at Shriekfest 2016. Then he went on to direct the features The Curse of La Llorona, and he's doing the upcoming Conjuring The Devil Made Me Do It. And that was the worst bit of trivia that I've read this entire time. It's not James Wan doing The Conjuring 3?
He's doing Aquaman 17.
He's got Aquaman.
Yeah, we gotta get that Aquaman money.
Can I ask you
COVID's
a question?
COVID's changed everything. Maybe it'll all shake out okay.
Yes, Elise.
Elise from Funhouse.
So I don't know if this is typical for Kind of Funny in Review, but if you're reviewing a franchise and then there's a piece of news that releases that's pertinent to that franchise, do you ever discuss it or is that out of bounds?
Well, the rules are you can make a podcast within a podcast whenever the hell you want. So at least if you want to make a podcast within a podcast right now, you just need to come up with a name and a jingle.
It's Patrick Wilson Watch. Where is he now? Where is he now? Where's Patrick Wilson?
I'm Patrick.
And news released last week, Patrick Wilson will be in fact directing the next Conjuring movie,
the fourth one,
right? Is that I don't remember what the news was specifically.
This is the worst podcast I've ever seen.
No, I think it was Insidious, the next Insidious movie. Yeah.
Thank you, Barrett. That is, and which actually, I love Patrick Wilson, love him. Mm-hmm. However, I am a bit skeptical of this news because this is a directorial debut. Mm-hmm. Horror is tough, especially executing this type of nuanced horror is very tough. So, though I love P Dubs,
listen, he has the invisible. He's in a movie, but no one knows if he's in a movie, and people forget if he's in movies. He's gonna make the perfect. By the number, he's going to come in under budget. He's going to do everything he needs to do to just Patrick Wilson eyes this movie. It's going to be great.
I'm lying in bed, just like Patrick Wilson.
It's going to get any worse than this movie.
So, I love
Patrick. Oh my God.
I love that Elise found a way to bring up Insidious, even though she didn't mean to.
I really did. The best.
A budget of $9 million and a box office of $123.1 million, becoming the lowest grossing film in the Conjuring franchise, although still successful at the box office. A runtime of an hour and 33 minutes.
I remember this.
So now, Nick, what's up?
I was going to say, I remember this having a fun trailer, because I think the trailer for it, or at least the clip that I saw originally, was the kids in the car, which I thought was a good part of this movie. I think this movie's fine. It's a very paint-by-numbers horror movie. I saw none of this movie.
This is the first time seeing anything. I had no idea what it was about other than the poster, which was just like a lake. I thought it was another period piece.
That was a kind of
like
movie.
The Nun. And I thought it was going to be all in Spanish. That is genuinely what I thought about this movie. And then when it opened, I was like, here we go. And then it goes, Los Angeles, 1972, or whatever. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Hold on. How come 90% of ghost activity takes place in the greater Los Angeles area? Like, I don't understand.
It's cheaper to film there, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
If you want, of course, James, over on Shudder, they have La Llorona, which is not Curse of La Llorona, and that's entirely in Spanish.
That's what I want. Maybe I'll go watch that afterwards.
So this is the rare instance where this is the first time all of us, with the exception of Greg, have seen this movie before, right?
Have seen this movie?
Have not seen this movie before.
I've not seen this movie, yeah, no.
So this So Elise, what are your thoughts?
Love Linda Cardellini. I think she's enchanting to watch. Seems like a very, very lovely person. Always delivers a great performance. It's difficult to watch Raymond Cruz and not think of Breaking Bad. He's the priest, and that's just all I kind of thought about.
Always the bad guy, and he's always the psycho. I think he was like a gangster in Training Day too, and he was terrifying in that scene on the table. So anytime he's like a priest, I'm like, nah, this dude's gonna kill someone. He's gonna fucking murder someone.
But he was kind of like an edgy priest. He wasn't a priest by the numbers. He was no. What was the guy from Annabelle?
Tony Amendola, Father Perez.
Luckily, Perez was in this one.
That's what ties it all in. You know what I mean? He's like, listen, I didn't believe in Jesus until I met this doll.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Things get nuts around this place.
This movie didn't necessarily build out the Conjuring lore in a way that I would have hoped it would.
Well, it's odd, too, because they have that other priest. And I was like, oh, he's going to step in and do this exorcism. He's like, no, I know another guy. And you're like, okay.
Who's it going to be?
Why can't you do it?
That random dude that we saw earlier in the movie in a really awkward scene.
Right,
he was protecting people.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought he did a good job, and I like that actor because he was in a movie called Clear and Present Danger, where he played one of the original founding members of Rainbow Six, which is awesome. But beyond that, I was just like, "Where is this movie going?" And he didn't seem too scared the entire time, so I wasn't that scared, which actually was kind of comforting because I watched it late last night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Greg, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think this is a fun one, especially watching them all over the place as we have throughout this. It's a fun horror movie. No, here's the thing. Nick doesn't like horror movies, but he showed up for this one, and now I got to sit here and eat his shit every day.
I'm not going to do it today.
It's a fun movie.
This is like a generic brand cereal, where you're like, I guess I'm eating it. That's what I'm
saying. I think it's better than the last one we watched, which is the farmhouse one. No, the one before, the least creative. Yeah, I'm having more fun with this one.
Oh my God.
Kids getting scared, kids getting drowned.
I didn't have too much fun with this one.
Oh, you're crazy.
Oh, look at that, Greg. What's it feel like being an outlier for the one first in your life? You're all fucking tall and beautiful over there.
I want to punch you in the head so hard.
For me, I really did not enjoy this one. I think that it just doesn't work as a horror movie. And I think that compared to all the other Conjuring ones, it's like this feels so generic. It feels like the Conjuring elements are the most forced in. Like it feels like this movie wasn't a Conjuring movie and then they made it a Conjuring movie. I don't have any evidence of that, but like, the inclusion of the priest in the scenes from Annabelle, it's like, how is this a Conjuring movie? A cuckoo movie, right?
Yeah.
Like,
even with the nun. Does the necklace ever show up in their like a treasure trove of rooms or anything like that?
No, I don't know.
So. Like, I mean, that's the thing where it's probably a ghost happening in their universe.
I'm sure they'll go back and digitally put it in there. I mean,
so far they didn't. And like, for me, it's like, even just looking at this as a movie, it's like, at least with The Nun we were talking about last week, if we didn't know anything about The Cuckoo, watching it, it's a fun horror movie, like with what Greg's saying. Not a good one, but like, whatever, it's fine. With this one, every single scare does the stupid like jump cut, like snap edit things where it's like, this isn't scary. Like there wasn't a single moment in this that was scary to me. It's like generic jump scares that don't work because the sound design was super off on it. And on top of that, it was just like built up in a way where we see the scary thing so early in this movie and it doesn't ever ramp up in what she's doing. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's always just, there's no face in the shot.
Oh, that got
That's
me,
it. Mm-hmm.
That got me.
Yeah. We just made it. The curse of Tim.
You know, Tim, you're spot on. And here's, and this is this for me, this is very paint by numbers. Like they just had to get this horror movie out because they needed to make some money. It fails on two levels for me. One, they don't, you don't care about the characters. And I think what I'm learning a lot with these movies is the ones that I really vibe with are the ones where I'm care more about the human tale of what's going on, the actual people, than the ghost or the ghoul that's haunting these people.
Surprising.
Right. And I think which one was the one with the farmhouse with all the kids? I just described Annabelle all two. Of them. I know Annabelle too. That one to me, I was like, this is the most fascinating one because I actually care about the story regardless of whether these people are being haunted. In this one, it's just so generic. And it almost insults the audience because they're like, it feels like the entire thing was rushed. There's a moment where they run up to the attic and I'm like, oh, finally, these kids are going to have to play this, the typical hide and seek game where we don't know if the ghoul can see them, but spoilers, the ghoul can see them, but they're sneaking. No. They're just up there and shit just starts moving around.
She moves everything.
Yeah. And it's not, there's no sense of pacing and there's no sense of tension. They don't let the characters exist there. Like James Wan does in the first Conjuring, where we just sit with them and we have time to get claustrophobic and we have time to realize there's something outside of the frame that we can't see because we're with this character, but we're never in that moment. Maybe a little bit in the car, but they just blew past that so quickly.
Trailer was fantastic, where it's the car scene, and I think that this movie has only two scenes that I really genuinely enjoyed, and the car scene was one of them, with the end of it where the lock pops up but it's actually Linda Cardellini. I was like, you got me, that was good. I enjoyed that a lot. And the bit where it's actually the other mom, the mom of the kids that died in the beginning of the movie, crossing into the
dragging her out or whatever,
when she like the into the house and like was allowed to cross the line, I was like, what's happening here? And then it's revealed it's her. I was like, oh, that was actually kind of clever. Yeah. Like that was pretty cool.
Did you like the one where the kid, despite being terrified the entire time, just goes, I'm gonna open this front door and
I'm
for
gonna
15
reach for my
minutes
doll.
Reach for my doll, because that's what's important right now. And she's, I know, kid. People in the chat are gonna be like, she's a kid. If put yourself in that situation, you've been terrified for 3 days straight. You've got burns on your arms and you're a kid. You'd be fucking traumatized. The last thing you'd need is that stupid toy out there, especially when the fucking guy, the drug dealer from Breaking Bad, is like, don't go out there, I'll fucking kill you, kid. She's like, ah, I'm gonna get this toy. Not scared at all. Just reaches over there. And I'm like, at this point, this is a cardinal sin for me in any movie. When I start rooting for the demon to win, that's when I know they've done it wrong.
I think for me, kill this kid. It's weird because like we're talking about how good the trailer is. I think watching it, I was like, oh, these are good moments, but I feel like they're filmed, they're like portrayed in such a vanilla way that they lessen them. I think the stuff like in the car, I think them feeling like they're trapped in this house is really good. And even like the opening stuff, like with the kids, like the first kids who were like in their, you know, they're pulled for child protective services and they're like in this place. Like for whatever reason, I was watching and I was going like, this should be scary. Mm-hmm. But I am not necessarily scared. And I think maybe some of it overall has to do with this movie isn't as good at moving the perspective from the children to the adults. Like it feels like it's more jarring. Like creation like really like floats on the kids' perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other Conjuring movies, it starts with the kids, but then you see how it like kind of like a virus spreads out into the family. And then once the Warrens show up, it's a movie. It's an adult perspective on like it. And that's what you were saying about like the fear growing. This movie just feels like sometimes it's kid stuff. Sometimes it's Linda Cardellini. Sometimes it's kid stuff. You're not
necessarily connecting with any of them. Because I didn't feel like I was connecting with the kids. Like Nick, sort of what you touched on.
Well, the movie's about, Linda Cardellini is seemingly the main character. And I think that's kind of a fault of the movie as well, is we don't, you're right. We don't spend enough time with the kids or really get to know them to a point where we care about them. But like, they just sort of fall into this, and they're sort of hapless victims, and they don't really do anything. If the kids were the main characters, the kids needed to be the one to grab the cross at the end and stab Lyra in it, right? But it's not. Linda Cardellini is the main character, and she's dealing with loss, but we never really get into that too much because we just see a picture of her husband. We don't get any scenes with him. We don't really understand. I mean, they want us to know that she's, you know, still in mourning for her husband, but we never really get to know that at all.
Well, I think that's the thing too, because like, again, back to the other movies that do like this kind of relationship better, you see the hardship, like the real world hardship that the adults are dealing with. And you kind of empathize with that while the children are dealing with this supernatural hardship, right? And then at some point, the two cross paths and you can see how they're like, they have morphed into this one big blob of like, how could this be any worse? So you have, you know, the mom who, dude from Office Space is gone all the time. And like, she's having to raise all these kids and it's just like very overbearing. Then you have another single mom in Conjuring 2. And in this movie, it felt like, they were like, we're telling her, oh, she is really upset about having lost her husband, but she's still pretty doing her job, and she's like only kind of struggling. It just didn't feel like the same, and it may just be a casting thing because I see Linda Cardellini and I go, she's gonna handle shit.
But isn't that the point of the character? Like, I like that she wasn't still devastated and wrecked by her husband's death. Like, I like that this wasn't super hung up on that. That it was that
growth.
She's strong person doesn't need to worry about that.
What's her growth trajectory?
But I do think in this it makes it harder for me to like feel this constant dread. Like, oh god, things are getting even worse for this person. How much shit does one person have to bear before they break? Kind of thing, which is just in general, I feel like a motif across all of the Conjuring movies. So this one just didn't feel as seamless, and I think that maybe influenced some of the scares of it. We'll probably get into it later, but I also don't think that the La Llorona was that scary.
She wasn't, and I think that this movie, like, it distracts you more than the other ones do. Like The Nun, I was complaining a lot about it at moments feeling like an action movie, and that was like weird. But with this one, it's the first time in the Conjuring cinematic universe that there's not a single character that acts believable ever. And I think that when we look at the other ones, there's pinpoints we can choose characters and be like, they wouldn't do that, or why is the dad leaving for a gig when all this crazy stuff's going on? Like, it just kind of seems unbelievable, but it can still be backed up with, well, they need money, they need this to survive, whatever. In this one, these little kids see a fucking demon, get burned, and don't tell their mom what happened.
Tell their mom.
Why? The mom goes through this issue. Yeah. The mom sees the burns, the same burn as the other kids, and isn't immediately like, oh, I gotta put this together, I know what's happening. And like, then they have the scene where she's looking at the pictures of the other kids and sees the exact same fucking marks that her kids have and doesn't immediately run up to talk to them. You know, it's just like, and they just continue going like that. And then the Child Protective Services storyline that goes on, it's like, why is this even here? Like, what is the point of this? It doesn't get resolved by the end.
Not only that, Tim, but it's like if someone complained about you and they sent me to go check on you. I'm like, what a conflict of interest. Is there only two people working?
Her coworker from the beginning of the movie
showed
up at her front door and she was like, finally, it's my turn to take your kids. It's like, wait, hold on. This is a weird animosity happening in the CPS office. It's really
strange. It's driven home, right? In the first scene where it's just like, she's going to take some of your cases. It didn't really drive home that they're like rivals to that level. And the woman has to say, I know you might not believe this, but I don't want to be here either. Like, oh, fuck, I didn't realize we're that much of enemies at work.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is dire at the social service office, man. It is
really cutthroat. Everybody's looking for that 15-cent raise.
I don't want to entirely dunk on this movie because I do think something that I appreciate is something that's watchable. And I'm constantly comparing things to the first Annabelle, where I was like, there's good moments, but I feel like things are dragging, which is also why I kind of was like more down with The Nun, because although it's tonally, I felt like it was way off from some of these other movies, I wasn't bored watching it. And then as soon as I thought I might get bored, it ended. with this movie, I liked Linda Cardellini, even if I don't know that she fit to really execute better. I liked her. I liked the priest, even if I don't know that he necessarily fit. Like, it's like they got these really great actors, even if they weren't right for the part. So there was like, I kind of enjoyed watching it. I still think there's moments too, like we're talking about the car. I think when the little girl has the umbrella,
Mm-hmm.
Like
with the pool.
Like if you're looking at the storyboards, it's probably like, oh shit, like that's real scary. It's a
great moment.
It's a great moment. Like you open up this thing and it creates this window and it's rainy, kind of like it makes sense thematically, and then there's a thing on the other side of it, but then you pull it away and it's gone. It's like that's a great horror moment. But something in the execution of it, like it being the daytime and the girl just kind of not really seeming too concerned, like I just didn't get fear from a lot of the things.
Oh, there's a great one where, like, when it's that one where she falls down and pushes herself away from the pool, and it's just a little girl going, and it's like, okay, well, you can see where the direction was.
Yeah.
Out of this poor girl to get it done. And I want to jump off of this, if you don't mind, Nick, before. Sure. Like, that's, I think, what speaks to me about the film, James, is like, I enjoy the cast more than the other casts. And it is that thing of everything we're all saying about, like, reasons why they do things or their motivations or the mom not putting it all together. It's all very accurate, and I think my bar is just so low after The Nun and the second Annabelle or whatever, or any of the first Annabelle, right, where it's just like
the second Annabelle is our ranked number two movie.
He meant the first
No, he's talking about the farmhouse one.
Yeah, the farmhouse one I don't love. I don't adore. Like, I think it's fine. But, like, and I enjoy this one more because I enjoy the cast more, I think, where I do enjoy Raymond Cruz, Raphael. Like, you know what I mean? I laugh multiple times with him where I like his stupid, like, I'm not scared. Or, I never, even Raphael, I'm scared. No, I don't. And, yeah, the ta-da, the holy water thing. Like, I enjoyed all that.
It's one of those things where I they had something there, and I wish that he had been a little bit more prevalent in the story. I wish that it would have been one of those things where we didn't, why did we need the other guy, the other priest in this story, except for to give us exposition and then tie it into the greater franchise of, I mean, this movie does not need, it's loosely like tied into the Conjuring series. If they hadn't made a mention of Annabelle and had this guy in it, there would be absolutely no connection to these two movies or these two series whatsoever. So I just wish that they would have had, it's the same issue I had with last week's movie where I'm like, why are there three main characters? Why is it not just the young nun and the older priest, or just the young nun and this farmhand that's an idiot that's needing to figure out that you shouldn't hit on nuns. It's just, it's very weird, and the guy kind of just feels shoehorned. It's to the point where I wasn't paying close enough attention during the scene where he's doing the sage stuff to people that I didn't recognize that it was him. So I rolled it back, and I was like, okay, they do have a shot of him looking over and being like, hello, look at me, because I'm going to be a character in the second act.
Oh, that's me.
But I wish that she had been, like, asked around, and they were like, you got to go to this guy. Or they had a scene. Yeah. Or a moment during that scene where he says something cryptic to her or something like that, and he's back there investigating instead of her having to like convince him to come help them, which was an awkward scene as well.
It did really feel like, we always talk about like what maybe were the phases that this movie went through. It did really feel like there was a La Llorona movie, and then there was a priest in it, and then they said, well, we want to tie this to something, so we're going to give some of those parts to Perez, rewrite that first introduction to this priest as Perez, and then now it's tied to Annabelle, and then we'll swap them at the end. And so it feels like it kind of undercut him, so he just showed up. Part of me, I was watching it and I was going like, are they setting up like an Avengers style?
Yes.
It's going to be the priest. Super, it's going to be Tysa. It's going to be the Warrens. Like, it's going to be all of the different people from the different movies, and they're going to combine under tutelage. Yeah, like
they have to stop the actual devil.
If there had been a roadmap for the franchise, there could have been a really eloquent way of having the same priest appear in both movies, and you know, these just be events within his life as he's supernatural fighting priest. Like that could have been something fun, but I do think that sometimes this franchise is a little bit, you know, looking to only the next movie and not 2 to 3 movies ahead.
Yeah,
which I still love it so.
I wasn't like incredibly bored watching this movie. It did have a little trouble keeping my attention at a certain point, just because I feel like there wasn't enough. One of the main reasons why I think that it suffers, and one of my big gripes with it, is that I just, the other movies, it became evident and they set up that it takes a long time for these things to wear people down to the point where then they can consume them, which gives the filmmaker and the writer and the audience a reason to be there for 2 hours. In this one, I'm like, why can't La Llorona just walk the fuck in and take the kid? I don't understand why those kids lasted any longer than 15 seconds. The other two kids went to a hospital. They're gone. They're, you know what I mean? So like an hour in, I'm like, I don't understand what her powers are and why she can't just, this is even before the priest. Why wouldn't she just, the second she grabbed that kid, kill it? I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's I'm right there with you, Nick. And it, you brought up not being bored, and James was talking about it as well, where it's like, I don't think this movie's boring at all. Like, it goes by fast enough, and it's fine enough. But I do find it disappointing. Like, I feel like I'm constantly looking at it, and I'm questioning, why am I watching this? Because yeah. I'm watching this to get a horror movie, to get scared, to see this stuff. Every single scare in this movie is La Llorona looking like somebody that just learned After Effects for the first time. There was a video copilot.com, and they're like, yeah, how many different ways can we show, like, oh, you can only see her in the umbrella or in this small mirror or in that small mirror, or how many doors can fucking open and close in this movie? Like, that is all every this movie door, is.
The doors are the real stars, the secret delight of this movie.
Oh, they're definitely doors on doors. It's insane. Like, for reals though, how many doors are there? Like, how many times are you going to rely on just a door opening and closing and then just getting a glimpse that looks just poorly done with a quick edit cut of her, like,
Tim, it's to the point where I actually thought if this were my house, I would consider taking the doors off the hinges and just putting them in the garage.
We got you now, La Llorona. Yeah.
I would also say just one thing in terms of her character. I thought it was really lame that they were like, we solved the problem by stabbing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the lamest way to ever defeat like a demon or a villain ever, is like by stabbing it, and then it's like, I'm bleeding to death. Like, and I know it's like, oh, it's from the tree that watched her murder her kids or whatever, but it still felt, I was like, there had to be a more creative way. Like, when they were doing stuff with the necklace, I was like, oh, the necklace is key here.
Put but it then back it's around like, her no, neck. No.
The necklace is just a stall for time or whatever, so we could see what she looked
like. And it's back to what you were talking about, right? Like, nothing's explained. Yeah, like, why does the mirror throw her off? Like, why does that have it? TimGettysKindofFunny.com.
I was just going to ask, like, what happened there? Like, so the kid had the necklace that was her necklace that she's had the whole movie, and she wasn't, like, normal when she had it earlier. But now she's normal?
Like her Miho giving a gift to her.
Her own necklace?
At the beginning, because I think, yeah, because, like, the first scene, right, is the kid... is a kid giving the mom a necklace, right? They're like, it's a child. The very opening scene is to like the kids in the field.
Yeah, son gives his mother a necklace.
And the son gives the mother a necklace. And then Linda Cardellini stole the necklace when they were wrestling in the pool.
And I wonder if in Conjuring 3 we'll see that necklace in the Warrens. Yeah, there'll be agreed. Some
I hope shot. So.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was, you know, it's one of those things where when the kid was... like moving back and the sheet was starting to come off of the mirror, I knew that it wasn't necessarily going to be a big plot point, but I thought when she saw herself, that was going to be like, oh my gosh, I see what myself I as a normal person again. Look what I've become. Yeah. And then that would have been the thing that would have needed to be set up. What a cool, what a cool thing and a giant missed opportunity to have the kids actually be the ones to like figure it out and beat the villain. But no, she just sees herself and screams again. And it's a little bit of a cheap scare.
Because what you want to be, I mean, here, not to do one of those things where the review is now rewriting the movie, but what you want it to be is a single mom dealing with the stress of having to raise two children all on her own, right? Like, how do you manage that life? On the bad side is a mom who the stress got her to the point where she said, I can't handle this so much that I'm going to kill my kids and kill myself, right? I can't endure this. And that's the worst case scenario.
And that's the theme.
And then you want it to be beaten by the best case scenario, which is a mom who cares for her kids. And despite all of the anguish and torment that she's going through, having had these kids, they are now literally haunted and possessed and stuff that I still can't. I could never imagine something bad happening to them. That goodness offsets the badness, which defeats the badness. It's what you kind of want the movie to be, but it really isn't so much. It's just kind of like two moms fighting each other in a lot of ways. And then one gets stabbed in the chest, you know?
It's the mom-juring is definitely mom-juring. This movie.
Oh, it's like, it's three moms fighting each other, right? Because we forgot about that other, I guess you were
talking
about that other character, but there is that second character that just didn't. And again, one of the cooler reveals, I do agree with Tim, where when she crosses the threshold, I was like, wait a minute, that's not cool. And then it reveals that it's the other mom. But man, she has a quick turn.
Well, Nick, you brought this up a second ago about like the themes and stuff, and like what James is talking about the two different sides. Really, just because it seems like the movie's theme is moms. They're like, oh, that's the common thread between the stuff. It's like, okay, but what about them? Just that they're moms.
Am I right?
Like, they all have two kids.
Mom and kill. You can be a good mom and take care of your kids. You can be a bad mom and kill your kids. You can be a middle of the road mom, try to protect your kids, and then try to kill some other mom's kids. But hey, we can all agree that mom's got kids.
Mom's got kids,
and they're the
mom's
best.
That is the thing. It's the heated emotions of the child protective services industry. Because yeah, that other mom Patricia or whatever. She's like, I prayed to her to go get your kids because of what you did. And she's like, stop the cop from knocking down your door and dragging you out in cuffs. Like, I literally just intervened to help you protect and keep your family together. And you did everything you could to fuck me over. And now you're cursing my kids. Piss off, Patricia. That's what I say.
Now, this is super nitpicky.
Eat a pickle, Patricia.
But at the end of the movie, I just thought it was really funny that the badass priest just gets in a taxi cab. It's like, that's like the most interesting way you could show him leaving the family. It's just like outside the house.
Jen was like, why is his bandage over his shirt? And I'm like, to remind us that he got shot. That's why it's like that, to remind us.
Well, it's like, if they're setting him up as this hero fighting priest, it's like the worst Batmobile you could possibly have, just having to call a taxi.
It's so weird.
How do you think that conversation went down once he got out of the taxi? Hey, sir, what's going on with your arm? Nothing. I got
Don't
shot.
Ask questions.
Yeah.
Don't ask questions. I'm not going to take you to the airport, sir. I'm sorry.
It's not I've also decided that one of the things that I hate about all of these movies is the motif of the last shot ending on something without anything happening.
Sure. Sure.
Like, because the last shot in this is she's like going to go back into her house, and she looks back and there's a puddle on the ground, and then it zooms into the puddle and shows her reflection, and then it ends. And I'm like, okay, I get it. In the first Conjuring movie, okay, they left you with some anticipation. They showed the little box, and you were genuinely scared because it had set up so many scares from that box. You're waiting for something to happen, and then nothing did, and the movie ends, and you're like, okay, that's a cool. But now it feels like every single movie ends with something, but it's all insignificant. It all ends on something that is nothing. So why are you showing me a puddle?
They're just comfortable. You know, they're just comfortable with the way they end these movies. Like, they know how to do it. Speaking of comfort, MeUndies believes that comfort is about more than what's touching your skin. It's about feeling comfortable in your skin. You're a total badass, and what you wear should only accentuate that fact. MeUndies truly believes in empowering self-expression. Their pledge for 2020 and beyond is called MeUndies Gives, an initiative that supports those who have systemic barriers to their self-expression. By shopping MeUndies, you support causes such as LGBTQ+ communities, mental health and well-being, and women's rights. I love MeUndies. We've been supporting it for years. Wearing a MeUndies shirt right now, MeUndies undies, MeUndies socks. I'm MeUndies out, and I'm feeling very comfortable thanks to their micromodal fabric. MeUndies believes you and your butt deserve comfort inside and out. That's a weird way to say that, which is why they created the MeUndies membership. It's really just a great way to love on yourself. Joey is a subscriber of this. She gets stuff all the time. She's always very excited. MeUndies has a great offer for you guys. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. To get your 50% off first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. And also, shout out to Blue Chew. Let's talk about something we could all use more of right now: sex. And I'm talking about great sex. You can now increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, bluechew.com. That's blue, like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises, baby. Let's go. You know what I'm talking about there. Blue Chew is made in the USA. It's prescribed online by licensed physicians, so you don't have to go to the doctor or wait in line. It's even cheaper than a pharmacy, and they prepare and ship it right to you in a discreet package. No awkwardness, and you don't need to leave the house. If you can benefit from more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Right now, they got a special deal for you guys. Visit bluechew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the promo code FUNNY. You just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUECHEW.com, promo code FUNNY to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper choice. Thank you for sponsoring this episode. BlueChew.com, use code FUNNY. Back to the show.
I'm going to give that a 7 out of 10. I don't know that comfort has anything to do with this franchise. I've never felt comfort while watching any of the Conjuring series. It was good.
Okay.
It was just okay. 7 out of 10. Just okay. Right.
Just okay.
Posted mm-hmm. there.
Firm but fair.
He wrote it down. That's ink.
Just like Blue Chew. Anyways, Greg, what else do you have to say about this movie? You have a look on your face. You look like you have something.
Yeah, come
I enjoyed myself body. In this movie. I really liked the cast. I thought the cast was really good and kept me entertained. I think that's what I lose about certain other ones where I just didn't enjoy people on screen and I just didn't hang with
them. See, I'm with James on this one. I think maybe Lisa. I love Linda Cardellini. I do. I just don't like her in this. I don't think that this was a good use of her talents. I don't think she sells horror.
You said
very
you started
well.
This talking about her guttural screams.
She has a scream. Robert, that was the one take we got on that one. We couldn't have. I mean, maybe it's just my anticipation that it's going to be like that high-pitched sort of like terror scream. This was more like when you drop a pan, you're like, oh no, and you're like, oh,
and she sounds like this. I mean she kind of has a voice like this anyway, so
yeah.
But
I speaking of screams though, I do think that this movie features the best scream we've ever seen so far in the whole Conjuring.
The little boy at the very beginning.
Beginning when he gets destroyed in the safe place, wherever the hell they are, in the green hallways. Oh my God, the sheer terror on his face. Like, give this kid all the awards.
I always want to know what they do to get the kid that to performance. Do it. Like, let's just got his mom and they put a gun to her head. Because he's contorted. He's great.
I thought you meant the kid at the very beginning when we get the flashback of the kid seeing his brother being drowned and he screams and it's not good at all. And I was like, just hit a level of B movie that I haven't seen.
Well, keep in mind that was in the 1600s. They screamed differently then, Nick.
I wouldn't know. I'm not that old, Greg. I wouldn't know.
No, it's not an old thing. It's a history thing. Like, they screamed differently there and it's just like how you would have been a really tall person back then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Hey, shout out to the 1600s.
I'm not making fun of her being sarcastic. That kid's scream is the best on-screen scream I've ever seen.
Back to when he's at the orphanage,
that kid.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was watching that scene, though, so he comes out, right, and he sees his brother standing in the middle of the hallway, and he's like, what's going on, man? What are you doing out here? And the little brother pointed, but because my monitor is so crushed as far as like the contrast is concerned, I thought he was just flipping off.
No, dude, that wasn't your monitor. That's how it looked. Like, that's it was so poorly shot with the angle where it's just like, it literally looked like he was just standing there.
And I was like, okay, he's just like, go fuck off, go back to bed. I don't know.
And again, back to the point of like the rules not making any sense in this movie, right? Like, this is, I guess, the establishment that what'll happen is La Llorona will fuck with you for a while and then eventually possess one of you to when she calls, you'll have to come and that's when she can take you over. Because that's what she does to Sam later on, right? Yeah. Remember when Sam's a zombie in the house and she's like, what's wrong with her? Or she keeps walking the door and what's wrong with her? And Raphael's like, La Llorona has her. Now the next time she calls, she'll come. But it's like, no one said that up until this point. Like, it's bad. You watch the entire movie right there with Nick of like, wait, so why doesn't she just yank them?
Oh, right.
She marks the kids to signify they're there, hers, but then she marks the mom as well. But then she has the kids multiple times.
Also, the best thing
with the kids trying to leave the house, but he can't because the chains on the door. Yeah, yeah. So that's a good point. I guess they do sort of set that up. Like it's a position.
But then also,
I enjoyed myself, and I'm not saying they set that up well.
The structure of it, though, is she doesn't become possessed until she, fully conscious, fucks up everything by reaching for a doll. Right? Like, there should have been a flip-flop there. Something should have happened to her, and then her being possessed is what compromised, and them not realizing that is what compromised their security in that house. Because after she's possessed, she just kind of tries to wander away, and they go, no. Like, no. And then they just kind of guide her to a closet, and then the brother's just like, we're just going to sit here, and she's fine. Like, and so, like, it is weird how those things got flip-flopped, right? It should have been the other way. It should have been, where is she? What's going on? Oh no, she was possessed, and that's what has now allowed La Llorona back in, or whatever.
Absolutely.
This was a movie that, toward the start of quarantine, I had asked Andy Cortez, Andy, would you like to do a watch party, watch this film? Because there had been, you know, obviously in the kind of funny community talk of trying to get him to watch this movie, and I thought, it's a safe space if he wants to watch it with James and I. We'll make sure, you know, 4 p.m., we're going to start it. He'll be done by 6. He can play some Overwatch in the evening. Calm down. He of course declined many times. But I'm kind of glad that it's not the best. So if I was going to have Andy watch a scary movie, I'm glad it wasn't this one.
Well, I heard that he did watch it.
Oh, he did watch
it. At least he was supposed to watch it. Oh. I'm not sure. Let's tune in with Andy Cortez and see.
He declined you, but.
Hey, interview crew. It's me, Andy. Sorry I couldn't be there. I was busy rocking the vote. I hope you were too. What a highly anticipated movie, though, in this franchise. Growing up in a Mexican-American household in the Rio Grande Valley, La Llorona, it's a tale as old as time. You know, you'd be playing with your cousins out by the canal or near a river or something. If you hear crying, you know La Llorona's nearby. La Llorona, she drowned her kids. I never really remember the reason why, but I think this movie was a faithful adaptation to that story. I thought it was well acted, well directed. I thought Danny Trejo did incredibly well across from John Leguizamo. I wasn't expecting him to be such a dynamic duo. Eva Longoria, I think she held her own, really played a very powerful role as La Llorona. I just thought it was an all-around great job from everybody involved. Shout out Benjamin Bratt as well. But yeah, I hope you all are doing well, and I'll see you all for the next interview, everybody.
It's interesting. It's interesting that, you know, there always seems to be something satanic going on when Andy Cortez is talking.
Oh, you guys heard that too? I thought it was just on my end.
But yeah. No.
Okay. Cool.
I thought it was going to be like a cool thing where he had a scare come up for us.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was going to distort and then be a scare, but it turned
out
then
I realized it would probably scare him too much to edit that.
Have to make sure.
It was probably just Discord, just being Discord on my end.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if audience, let us know in the chat if you heard that or if it was just
no. The audience did not hear that. If I couldn't hear it, they couldn't hear it.
Cool. What's the scariest bit of this movie?
Elise, hit the song.
Ragu.
Ragu. I talk bad guys. In this universe, we rank two things. The best scare, which is actually unranked, and then the best beastie. Right now, for the best scares in the Conjuring universe, again, these are unranked, so in the order they happen, the fucking clap in Conjuring, the girl, the crazy woman in the doorway in Annabelle, the nun to the hallway to the painting in Conjuring 2, the sheet ghost bunk beds in Annabelle Creation, and then the nun hands in the casket, and the silver spoon in the nun. For this one here, Curse of La Llorona, what's the scariest part? What's the best scare?
I mean,
it's got to be the car, right? We all seem positive on the car.
Yeah, I think it is.
Something it's weird, though, because it doesn't feel... It's like... I guess it's like... Is. I mean, it's scary. I guess it's a scary moment, but it's also... I don't know. I wasn't like, I was like, it's well done. Like the.
But are you ever, in this film?
I mean, when you compare it to stuff like the clapping and the nun behind the painting, sure. Those are moments that like
super unnerving.
Like, yeah, cause you to like feel alarmed at least. I don't know.
I'll give it to the car one for a couple of reasons, because the trailer was so good, and I feel like when we name a lot of these scares, it is like, what's the most iconic scare? Yeah. Not necessarily the scariest scare. Mm-hmm. Like when we're talking best scare, and I will, for the rest of my life, when I think of La Llorona, I think about the car scene. Like, they did something that stuck with me there. And watching the movie added onto the trailer with the Linda Cardellini opening the door, where I was like, that was actually pretty good. That was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Now, Greg, can I introduce for the first time ever a podcast within a podcast?
I'd love you to.
I would like to do the first official best scare, best hair podcast within a podcast. Who had the best hair?
Hold on. Is this a podcast within a podcast within a podcast?
Absolutely, because we haven't voted on Ragu Baggy yet. I think we all just agreed on the car, right? Because
yeah.
I can't remember any of those scares. Just does not speak well for this movie.
I think best scare hair has to be the kid in the bathtub getting her hair washed by the ghost hands.
True. Not
that's
scary.
Good.
That moment for somehow was managed to not be scary at all. I was like, that looks nice.
I would totally take those
very
hands.
Very slow.
Yeah, again, that's another one of those scenes where I thought the same thing. Where I was like, this should be scary. Like those hands coming in, there was just something about the speed at which they came in and the way it was shot that I was just like, oh, okay.
Gingerly.
It felt like they couldn't make a scary movie parody of this movie because they had already shot things the way that you would shoot it in a scary movie, which is to take the fear but then remove it, right? Like, so like the hands coming, that whole sequence felt like, I was like, this feels like it would be in a scary movie, but I don't know how they'd change it.
Yeah, if it had been Mitch McConnell's hands coming in.
I'll tell you one thing right now. All they need is Marlon Wayans. I bet someone out there in our community could recut this movie with any Marlon Wayans movie or any Damon, like any Wayans Brothers movie, and it could just be a scary movie. You just put him in there. One scene, yeah. Boom, done.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not a nice thing to say about this.
No, it's not.
Let's do a little bit of the Ragu Bagu. We already did all the fun songs. Greg, where are we at with the ranking of the Beasties?
Did we come up with best hair, though? Did Nick introduce the segment? I never heard what he wanted to put there.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to recommend the actor who played the priest because he had great hair this entire time.
Okay.
That's
okay.
All I wanted. All right.
Yeah. Father Perez.
Father Perez.
Referring to Father Perez, of course.
Oh, I also, are we talking about Raphael?
The guy that got a gunshot. I forget his name.
Raphael, all right.
Yeah. But Perez also should be in there.
I love that Nick introduced a new podcast within a podcast when, like, Nick's most famous podcast within a podcast is Wigging Out, which is all hair-based. And granted, we don't know it was a wig, but I feel like you could have just put it under that.
Yeah, I could have, but I think it was his natural hair. I think the guy's just got great hair, and we all need to.
All right, it's time to rank the best beastie right now in our Conjuring in Review Cuckoo Ragu Bagu. It looks like this. Number one, Valak in Conjuring 2. Number two, Annabelle's Demon in Annabelle Creation. Number three, Bathsheba in Conjuring. Number four, Annabelle's Demon in Annabelle. Number five, The Nun in The Nun. Where do we want to put La Llorona from La Llorona?
Dead last.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think
there's nothing compelling about this character at all.
I don't think that I was not frightened of her.
No.
She looks a little bit like bad It cosplay in a couple
sure.
instances.
I see it.
Okay.
All right.
And I just, yeah, I don't know. I don't, it's not memorable. There's no memorable scares. There's no situations really that I can think of. But that the washing of the hair should have been like, oh my God, this is an iconic scene
that's,
in this movie.
That's what
but
I feel. I feel like somewhere out there is concept art and storyboards for this movie that are really scary, that mm-hmm. like seem to paint a really scary, like the image of the wedding dress, like, time, like period piece time, wedding dress, like that stuff that should be all be terrifying. That's like default terrifying up there with like wicker wheelchairs in terms of like you're just scared.
That's cute.
That's right? Terrifying.
Like, and so it should be, but then you see her, and I maybe a part of it is because you see her pretty clearly from very early on. Like there's a couple moments where the kid walks up to the fence and then she's like hovered over there crying and she goes like and her neck like cracks. But then it feels like from then on out, they're like, she's got yellow eyes. She's like a ghost face with yellow eyes.
It's scary.
And you're like, I'm not as scared of that anymore.
No. This is so it's hard
like to demonize, right? That's the whole thing about it. Yeah. Where I think, again, trying to pull it into the Conjuring universe when it really doesn't feel like it was originally designed to be in the Conjuring universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's weird for me because like I definitely think La Llorona's last because there's no consistency and also there's no scares. And that's the whole point of this. But it's hard for me to say that because The Nun sucked. The Nun really sucked. So like, I want to just give a shout out to the bottom two for me, which is The Nun and La Llorona. Get the hell out of here. Come on.
You ain't scared. You got busted.
Yeah, totally. Anyone disagree?
Nope.
No.
100%. No. Bottom says cease. All did. I get sometimes I get French and Spanish confused now. I took a year of Spanish in high school, and now mm-hmm. sometimes the French words are gone.
Your conjugations are all screwed up.
I hear you.
Elise, can we get a little haiku in review?
Seven syllables in the middle. Are you guys going to clap for it? Sure, I don't know where the claps go.
Clapping comes at the end, generally.
Usually when it goes, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. Seven syllables in the middle. Five for the first and last one. I can't do this to the rhythm. I'm so sorry. We are gonna have to kill the claps.
Greg, let's kill the claps for Elise. Thank you.
Killing the claps,
Elise, let's take it one more time.
If you could do the claps between me talking.
Yes, but I don't think the claps happen there.
Oh God,
is
this live today?
Yeah. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna clap based off of you. I'm gonna silence myself so you don't get thrown off of the claps. How about that?
That's great. That's great. Thank you, Barrett. Seven syllables in the middle. I can still hear you. I can have
yeah, the clap one absolutely came
through. It's super off. I don't think you need
no, it's not off on my end, though. And it's not letting me mute myself. That's so weird.
I don't even think the clap happened there.
We'll do it live.
All right.
Seven syllables in the middle. Five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, don't need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku. In review. Were you guys just clapping wherever you wanted?
That's is it just me? Isn't the clapping just haiku in review? Clap, clap, haiku in review, clap.
It's not quite that.
The claps or whatever.
Welcome to Haiku in Review. This is where you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form. Just like the Meep Master. There's nowhere to hide. La Llorona wants small fries, just wants to baptize. You don't need to rhyme, but I always appreciate when it does. I appreciate
that
when
is
it
a
does.
Good, that is the good thing about being killed by La Llorona is that you go to heaven because you're baptized right before you die, and then you get sent right up, so you're good.
Wow. Wow.
I don't know if she's baptizing you.
She's bath-shebatizing.
I like to baptize you sometimes, Greg.
God damn. Nat Vu writes in. Nat Vu says, jump scare.
Stupid face, Greg.
Jump scare the movie. Velma didn't say jinkies. The kid was real dumb. Mm-hmm. There was a little Easter egg. They were watching Scooby-Doo. Linda Cardellini, Velma, and Scooby-Doo.
Linda Cardellini's Velma, Scooby-Doo. She's also in one of my favorite all-time Adam Sandler joint movies, which is Grandma's Boy, which he's not in, but that was one of his Cruise movies.
Samuel Griffin says, man, that's a scary movie I totally watched, like Andy Cortez. And finally, Andrew Feistner says, have any demon you want, as long as it is a La Llorona. Fast and Furious, baby. Fast and Furious. Join the family. You love to see it. Woo! How did we go 55 minutes without doing that? We did it before the show, but we didn't actually do it in the show.
I think that's
show.
Why it was a lot of pre-show.
Got it out of the system.
We kind of set it up, and it was like, all right, let's chill.
Yeah, it was. We wasted all the good stuff right before the podcast started.
That's how it always goes.
Now it's time to rank the Conjuring universe, cinematic universe. Currently, number one, The Conjuring. Number two, Annabelle Creation. Number three, The Conjuring 2. Number four, The Nun. And number five, Annabelle.
I think this is above Annabelle. I would put it above Annabelle because I just was so fucking bored watching that first Annabelle. I just did not care at all.
I would put it above The Nun.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so. Okay.
I'd put it last.
It's you last,
put this one
guys.
Last. Okay.
Yeah.
My thing is Annabelle, I know you guys like really hate it, and I didn't like it either, but at least it had some scary moments. The elevator scene in that is better than anything in this movie by a long shot.
Yeah, but I was just so bored by the time we got to that. Again, that was one of those movies where I'm like, just kill her, just take it, just win. I don't need to see this person do this anymore. At least this one, the kids did a good decent job here and there. I think Linda Carlin
did a
decent job.
Name one decent thing the kids did.
Yeah, you're bringing up a lot of good points right now, Tim. Fine, dead last.
here's my concern is when I first watched Annabelle, I went, wow, that sucked, and then when we were going to rewatch it for this, I kind of got excited for it again because I was like, it couldn't have been as boring as I remember it being. And then it was. So I'm worrying that it's happening again. The cycle is repeating itself.
Oh my God.
With Annabelle, where you watch it, no one enjoys it. And then as you get further away from it, you assume it can't be as unenjoyable as it was. And then so you start to give it more positive attributes, even though it doesn't deserve them. I'm just worried that the cycle is repeating itself. That's my concern. So I feel like having seen Annabelle twice, I'm probably going to put this one above Annabelle for me, at least. But I don't think it was as fun as The Nun. I thought The Nun was stupid, but I thought at least The Nun was like, watching your Halloween.
The Nun,
I always
the Nun
had a lot
least
going on. It doesn't seem to match the world at all, but I was like,
The way I feel about this is looking at these movies, I feel like we're starting to see some solid tiers forming. And it's pretty clear there's the good tier and then the bad tier. And that's kind of all that it is. And I feel like Conjuring 2 and above, we're talking good. Everything else below, we're talking real bad. And when I look at like the MCU, which is the birth of all of these cinematic universes that we're talking about here on In Review, there's the clear tiers that start forming of like the top tier where we're talking about Thor Ragnarok and whatever. And then there's the bottom tier where we're going all the way down to Dark World. Mm-hmm. I feel personally like The Nun and La Llorona are the Thor Dark World, whereas Annabelle is more of a Thor, where it's like, I don't like it. And it's clearly bottom tier. But it's not Thor Dark World. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, Annabelle, I feel, is at least a step up above The Nun and La Llorona.
I feel like everything you're saying is sacrilege because one of these movies has Chris Hemsworth shirtless and the other one doesn't. So Tim, I need you to go into the corner and flagellate yourself while you talk because the Thor movies are far and away better than this movie ever can possibly be.
Well, again, he's talking about the tiers.
I know.
He's saying they're in the same tier.
I'm teasing him for comparing this movie to anything the MCU has done. As I'm sure the chat will shortly now as well. I don't know. I feel like this. I think these movies are in two tiers, personally. Enjoyable.
That's what I just said.
Well, I guess. Right. Okay. I'm sorry.
I can't tell if Nick's going to do an ad segue because he's agreeing with you.
And speaking of tears, let me tell you about Robinhood.com.
Okay, let me disagree with you then, because I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like this movie is, I don't ever want to watch this movie again. How about that? We'll just say that.
See, I think Tim nails it.
You got to rank them.
I think Tim
nails
it that there's the two tiers, and for me, this is the best of the bad movies. Like, I think it's above the Annabelle and Nun that you put out.
Well, let's vote, everybody. Who thinks this is better than Annabelle? Raise your hand.
Yeah, I'll say
Greg.
I'll say it.
Greg, James, and Nick, raise their hand.
Peer pressure vote from Nick.
Who thinks this is better than The Nun? Raise your hand. Greg raises his hand. So the new rankings are: number one, The Conjuring; number two, Annabelle Creation; number three, The Conjuring 2; number four, The Nun; number five, The Curse of La Llorona; and number six, Annabelle. Next week, we're taking it home, baby, with Annabelle Comes Home, the final movie so far in the Conjuring universe, cinematic universe. Very excited about this one.
Nick, you know? if you had to rewatch any of the two last movies we've watched, which would you want to watch?
Between The Nun or this last one?
Or this
La Llorona?
Yeah, which one?
I would probably Nun.
There you go.
We're back in it, boy.
Redemption. Redemption.
Love you guys. We'll be back later. Bye.